We're going to talk about the big episode of the Parsha. We're going to focus on Yehuda's opening monologue. And as Professor Nechama Leibowitz points out, this is actually the longest speech in all of Sefer Bereishis. All of Sefer Bereishis, from Pasuk Yud Ches all the way to Pasuk Lamed Daled, 17 Pesukim, it's going to be a long speech. We're not going to be focusing on all the things that Yehuda seems to be adding to the story or taking out or changes that he makes, even though that could be an extremely, extremely fruitful topic. For us, what we're going to address today is two main questions and the ramifications of those questions. Number one, what is the goal of Yehuda's speech? What is Yehuda trying to accomplish with his speech? And what does that subsequently tell us about Yehuda's character? That's really focus number one, which is Yehuda, what is he trying to do? And what does that tell us about Yehuda? That's big question number one. Big question number two is, why does Yosef respond the way that he does? We know right after the speech, Yosef finally reveals himself to the brothers 22 years after being sold. And what is it about Yehuda's speech, and why does Yosef now decide to reveal himself? And finally, what the sub-question of that is, what does this tell us about Yosef's character? So in essence, we're really just saying, number one is, what is the nature of Yehuda's speech, and why does Yosef choose to reveal himself? So and page number one is really... we're going to keep going back to pages number one and number two. Those are the psukim. And we're going to see three main approaches that we're going to take. The approach number one is Rashi / the Midrashim. Approach number two is Yosef Bechor Shor. And approach number three is the Ramban. So for the first focus, we're going to take, again, each one of the two questions through those three perushim. So for Shitas Rashi, what is the goal of Yehuda's speech? Again, Rashi, a little bit of Midrashim. Rashi doesn't comment on every pasuk, but putting together the main thrust of the Midrashim could be its totally own shir, but assuming that Rashi and the Midrash kind of have a combined Shita. So three pasuk Yud Ches, source number one, page number one. Vayigash Elav Yehuda. Yehuda approaches Yosef. Remember, Binyamin was just accused of finding the goblet, and Yehuda basically comes back and says, Yehuda had asked Yosef to ease up a little bit. We'll take all of us. And Yosef says, I don't want any of you. I'm just keeping Binyamin. The rest of you are free to go. So Yehuda approaches Yosef. Vayomer biaduni. Let your servant speak a word in the master's ears. Don't get angry at your master. So a lot of subtle, vague descriptions being used here. Number one, what does this mean? Daber ba'azne adoni. Like, anytime I speak, it's in your ear. Why is Yehuda saying, I'm going to be speaking in your ear? Va'al yichar abcha be'avdecha. Imagine starting off a speech, he's speaking to your parent, and you didn't do anything wrong. But don't get upset, Abba, because you're already indicating there's a reason to be upset. And then finally, kicha mocha keparo. You're like paro. You don't always meet your idols. Kicha mocha keparo. You're like paro? What is Yehuda trying to say? So Rashi picks up on these questions. And Rashi says in source number three, Valyichar Avcha, Mikan Atalame Chediber Alav Kashos. We see from here that Yehuda spoke to Yosef harshly. He spoke to him harshly. He was giving him a very hard time. So we're going to see that the rest of the psukim seemed to be just a simple telling of the events. Yehuda says everything, not everything, he'll leave certain details out, which we'll get back to in a couple minutes. But he just says, we got to Mitzrayim, you asked about our family, you said bring down Binyamin, we brought down Binyamin. It's going to be so painful for Yaakov, so please let me take his place. That is the thrust of what Yehuda is saying. So, Va'yichar Abchadli, he spoke with him harshly, it's not really so apparent in the psukim that he spoke so harshly to him. We have to try and figure out, where did he speak harshly and what is he saying?
His speech is like, it's your fault.
He's blaming him, but nowhere in the Torah does it say, this is your fault. He's just saying over the facts. We're going to see that some people might be understanding that there's like a subtle criticism here, which we'll get back to in a minute. It's a great point. But Rashi does not say that. Rashi says, if you look at source number four, what is ki kamocha keparo? So let's go to the last shot in the third line of source number four. Dover acher ki kamocha keparo im takniteni erog uscha ves adonecha. If you bother me, you're paining me, you continue to go in the manner that you're going, I'm going to kill you. And how are you like paro? I'm also going to kill paro. I'm going to kill you. Yehuda is threatening Yosef. Yehuda is saying, I am going to kill you. You don't give us back Binyamin, I am going to kill you. And not only am I going to kill you, I'm going to kill Paro. And it's very much played up in the Medrash in source number 5. Ki chamocha kiparo, ma paro melech vata sheni lo be'erech Mitzrayim. Paro's the king, and you're second in command of Egypt. Kach abba melech be'eretz Kanan. My father is the most prominent man of all of Eretz Kanan. Obviously, it doesn't mean literally the king. Va'ani sheni lo, and I'm the second person. I'm the most second most chashev. Ve'im sholif ani escharbi mimcha ani machil. And if I take out my sword, I'm starting with you. U'beparo rabcha ani mesayim. And you know who I'm ending with? I'm ending with Paro. So for Rashi in the Medrash, what is the first pasuk saying? Yehuda is basically saying, I'm saying a lot of words. I'm going to be recounting the story. But if you don't listen to me, I am going to kill you. And not only am I going to kill you, I'm going to kill Paro. And we see in the next Medrash, in source number 6, that it even goes one step farther. If we look at source number 6, Amar Yehuda l'Naftali. Yehuda tells Naftali, you know, Naftali is always known as the quick one. Leich u're'e kama shvakim b'mitzrayim. So go and see how many, it literally means markets, probably in this context it means more like cities or areas of living. See how many places there are in Mitzrayim. Kafat v'chazar amar lo shneimasar. You know, it's like the superhero, the Flash. Naftali runs around and he's like, there's 12. 12 places, 12 areas of people living. Amar Yehuda le'echav, ani achriv mehem shlosha, v'tzlu kol echad v'echad, echad, v'lo nishar behem ish. So I'll take 3, everyone else takes 1, I'll kill the 3, you kill the 1, and we'll conquer all of the land of Mitzrayim. Amar lo echav, Yehuda, Mitzrayim ain't kishchem. Mitzrayim is not like Shechem, we can't just wipe it out. Im atamachriv etz Mitzrayim, tachriv es kol ha'olam. Everyone's relying on Mitzrayim for food. So if you destroy Mitzrayim, you're not just destroying Mitzrayim, you're actually going to destroy the world because no one's going to have any food to live.
But he's not going to destroy the food.
Okay, so it could be, but you have to figure out why would be destroying Mitzrayim being destroying the whole world. Okay, maybe they didn't know the secrets of where everything's held and how they're going to distribute, and they didn't have the distribution system, but noted, the point's noted. But either way, for Rashi, what is Yehuda's speech? Yehuda is taking an aggressive approach. Right? Yehuda's taking an aggressive approach and saying, I am threatening you, Yosef. I'm threatening you, Paro. And not only that, I'm going to take the whole Mitzrayim with me. Before we get back to the end of the Medrash, I just want to step back for a second. And what does this tell us about Yehuda's character? Who is Yehuda? Right? From this approach, it seems like
he's a king.
He's a king. He's a warrior. He's strong. He's brave. He's courageous. He's willing to threaten the viceroy and the king of Egypt, the most powerful country in the world, and say, I'm going to take you down. This is not Shechem, where it's like, okay, it might be a big city, but it's not Mitzrayim. It's not the supplier of the world where everyone's coming from around the world to get their food, the famous pharaohs. He's really willing to say, I'm going to kill you. And he's confident in himself. Not only that, he's saying, I'm going to take 3 cities. You guys can take 1. You guys are strong. I believe in you. I'm a leader. I'm a general. And I'm going to walk the walk. And I'm going to kill 3 of them. Right? He seems like he's confident. He's a warrior. He also seems to have the ear of his brothers again. If we know, think back to a couple of weeks ago, it's just totally a separate idea, but definitely in the has to be thought about when reading this parsha of Yehuda, the account of Yehuda and Tamar. Yehuda famously is like almost outcast after Mechiras Yosef, and it's, you know, kind of sent away and loses his position of prominence. And a lot of people look at like this speech as Yehuda doing tshuva, which we'll get back to in a minute, and this is his way back up. But for this medrash, it sounds like even before this great triumph of Yehuda, he's shouting, Naftali, you do this, and we're going to split up and do this, and he's having an argument, and it might be that we're going to see in a minute that the brothers actually agree to do what Yehuda says. So we see that Yehuda has already returned to his prominence even before this speech back to Yosef. We already see that maybe after the tshuva of Tamar, he's already regained that position of the leader of his brothers. We have other accounts of Yehuda being the one to speak up, but here it is clear that his brothers are listening to him, and he is the general. So for Rashi, Yehuda is taking the approach of, I'm going to kill you, that is what I'm doing, and Yehuda is courageous, daring, bold, strong, but there seems to be less of a focus on tshuva. That doesn't seem to be the story for Rashi. So why does Yosef give in now? So if we look at source number two, right after Yehuda's speech, V'lo yachol Yosef lehis apek lechol hanitzavim alav. I'm on page two, source number two. V'lo yachol Yosef lehis apek lechol hanitzavim alav. Vayikra hotziu chol ish me'alai. V'lo amad ish ito bezvada Yosef elachav. Yosef was literally not able to hold back to everyone who's standing around. So he calls out, remove everyone from in front of me, and no one should stand in front of me when Yosef was going to reveal himself to his brothers. So the Mefarshim struggled tremendously to understand what exactly is going on in this pasuk. Rashi famously in source number 7 says, what does it mean, v'lo yachol Yosef lishapek lechol hanitzavim? Lishapek means that Yosef was not able to handle. He wasn't able to deal with it. So what was it Yosef not able to handle? So Rashi explains, lo haya yachol lisbol shehayu mitzrim nitzavin alav v'shomin she'echav mizbaishin behodu lahem. Yosef was not able to handle the fact that he was going to reveal himself to his brothers. Say, I am Yosef who you sold to Mitzrayim, and embarrass his brothers in front of the Egyptians. So why does Yosef, what does the pasuk mean that Yosef was not able to handle? According to Rashi, it means that he wasn't able to handle his brother's embarrassment. So he sent everyone out of the room. But for Rashi, the pasuk is not describing why Yosef reveals himself now. It's just, now that I'm revealing myself, I can't do it in front of all the Egyptians. But it's not explaining why Yosef reveals himself. So why does Yosef reveal himself? You're going to tell me that Yehuda goes on the longest monologue in all of Sefer Precious, and there's no reason why Yosef's going to reveal himself? We have to figure out, what were Yosef's original motivations? Why does Yosef put through the brothers through all these charades and putting the money in their sacks and the goblet in Binyamin's bag? So we have to figure out all that, but Rashi does not tell us. Rashi never tells us. So why does Yosef reveal himself? So if you look back to the end of the Medrash in source number 6, again, we're still on page number 2. So right now they have this plan. Yehuda says, let's destroy Mitzrayim. The brothers are like, hey, maybe not so fast. But then what happens? So we're in the source number 6, the third line. Ba'osa sha'a v'lo yachol Yosef lehisapek. At that time, Yosef hears what's going on. That the brothers have this plan to potentially destroy Mitzrayim. Kevan shera Yosef shehizgima daitam lahachrevet Mitzrayim. Yosef sees that they seem to have agreed to actually destroy Mitzrayim. Pause for a second. It sounds like the brothers eventually gave in to Yehuda because Yehuda's opinion was that important. And then Amar Yosef belibo, Yosef says in his heart, mutav sheezvada lahem va'al yacharivu es Mitzrayim. That it's better that I reveal myself now and that they not destroy Egypt. So Yosef seems to be saying, what's going to happen if I don't reveal myself? They're going to destroy all of Egypt and kill all of Egypt. So I cannot let them do that. So even though I have my reasons why I've been hiding myself, but now that I understand that Yehuda and his brothers have in mind to kill Mitzrayim, so therefore I have to reveal myself. Is that because of, protecting his people and Yosef as a leader? Is that because he doesn't want his brothers to stumble the same way they did Shechem? The Medrash doesn't tell us. But then the rest of the Medrash tells us the story about how Yosef reveals himself to his brothers, etc. But for Rashi, we get a picture into what is Yehuda doing. It's threatening Mitzrayim, and that Yehuda is a courageous leader, a general, brave, strong, mighty. And why is Yosef revealing himself according to the Medrash? It's because Mitzrayim is at stake. And Yosef cannot let that happen. So that is our approach number one. That's Shitas Rashi and the Medrash. Shitas number two is the Bechor Shor. Who is the Bechor Shor? So he's one of the Baalei Tosfos. He lived in around the 12th century. Most people assume that he's the same person as one of the Baalei Tosfos, the Rime Orleans, Rav Yosef of Orleans, which is Orleans and is in northern France. And he's a Talmud of Rabbeinu Tam. So he's a Talmud of Rabbeinu Tam. So he wrote a commentary on the Torah, the Bechor Shor. Happened to be in Sefer Bereishis. I've been doing a little bit more Bechor Shor this year. wild things to say, extremely interesting, very creative, highly, highly recommended. But he has a, and he actually comments on much more of the story. So we're going to be able to get a little bit of a fuller picture than we did with Rashi. So what was the goal of Yehuda's speech according to the Bechor Shor? So now we're flipping to page number 3, source number 8. So according to the Bechor Shor, like we said a minute ago, what was Yehuda doing? Yehuda was telling a story. But he knew that Yosef had framed Binyamin. We'll see that inside in a second. He knew that Yosef had really put the goblet there, that Binyamin did not steal it. So therefore, he was kind of criticizing Yosef. He was criticizing Yosef for what he did. I know what you did, and you're the one who put us in this situation. But he's also a normal person. You're going to go to the viceroy of Egypt, where your lives are at stake, and you're going to criticize him? So what are you going to do? I'm not going to threaten him, right? Because the obvious problem for Rashi is, where is it in the Pesukim that Yehuda ever threatened Yosef? It never appears. Ki kamocha kaparo? Because you're like paro and al yichar apcha? Okay. But really what the Bechor is going to, Shor is going to say is that Yehuda is rebuking Yosef, but doing so in a respectful, subtle manner. That is the Bechor Shor's opinion, and we're going to carry that through the Pesukim. Okay, so if we look at source number 8, Vayigashi love Yehuda ha'arev. Why is Yehuda the one speaking? Because he's the guarantor. Vayomer bi Adoni. Mechalani panecha. Shatasim aznayim. I'm asking you nicely. Listen. Vitavin masha ani omer. And understand what I'm saying to you. Right? Ki yari ani lomer locha beferish masha em libi. I have what I want to say to you, but I'm scared to say it explicitly. Ki yodea haya Yehuda. Yehuda knew. Ki Yosef siva lases hagvia bamtachas binyamin. Yehuda knew in reality that Yosef had really commanded to put the goblet in Binyamin's bag. Ki kim luhu b'Binyamin, v'advarim mochichim, kamosha amar Yehuda. He knew Binyamin's character, and also all the facts indicated that really Yosef had put it in. El, as we'll get to in a minute. Ela haya yare lomar lecha beferish. He was afraid to say it explicitly. So, number one, it explains the pasuk. Again, I recommend taking page 1 out, because we're going to keep referencing page 1. It says, "Yidaber na avdecha davar ba'azne adoni." I'm speaking to the ears because I want you to not, when you have to listen with your ears, so you actually have to focus on what I'm saying, because there's a subtle rebuke and you can miss it, but pay close attention. So basically what he's saying is pay close attention to what I'm saying, because I can't say explicitly what I want to say because I'm scared of you, but listen closely. And that explains the end of the pasuk. L'kach amar lo kishetavin, when you understand, al yichar apcha be'avdecha. Don't get upset, because I'm imani mochichacha. And kikamocha keparo, ki ani yodeya shata kamelach, v'in lomer lemelach b'yal. Why am I not saying this explicitly? Because you're a king. You're like paro. So I can't say, you caused all this. This is your fault. And then end the speech. Give us back Binyamin. Because I'm afraid for my life. So I have to tell you, don't get upset. You're like paro, to let you know and to listen closely, because there's a subtle message going on. But I can't say it out loud because, you know, I'm scared. And that makes a lot of sense. So Yehuda's being extremely brave because he's willing to confront the, which we'll get back to in a minute. He's willing to confront Yosef, but he's not willing to go all the way out of threatening Yosef. That's a whole, whole different level. Okay, so we look back at the next pasuk, and again, in source number 1, pasuk Yotes, Adoni sha'al es avadov leimor, hayesh lachem avaach. So Yehuda starts his speech saying, Yosef, you asked your servants saying, do you have a brother or a father? That was Yosef's question. So as we know, there are a lot of discrepancies in the actual account that we find when the brothers first meet Yosef and the speech. In the Pesukim, it actually never says that Yosef asked that question, but we're not going to talk about that right now. But as Nechama Leibowitz also points out, that the word Eved here is used 13 times in these Pesukim. The word Eved is used 13 times, very much indicating this, like, respect. We are your servants, and trying to double down, which fits very well for the Shita of the Bechor Shor. So Bechor Shor says, why are you asking about our father and brother? Look at source number 9. Malacha al avinu ve'achinu. V'chi l'chol habayim ata shoa al mishpachtam. Everyone who came to buy food, you're going to ask about their family. You're going to say, you have a father, you have a brother. You know, what's it like? Where do you vacation? Like, what's going on? Why on earth are you asking? And we still, and Bechor Shor says, we told you, we didn't back down. And we told you everything that was going to happen. But the Bechor saying is when Yehuda mentions the fact, Avo Ach, that you asked us about our father and brother, that is a subtle rebuke. Why on earth are you asking us about our family life? You didn't do that for everyone else that came down to Mitzrayim. Okay, next piece of evidence in Pasuk Chaf. So we look in the Psukim in Pasuk Chaf. I'm back on page 1 in Pasuk Chaf, source number 1. Vanomer El Adoni, we respond back. Yes, Lanu Av Zakein, we have an elderly father. V'yelad Zekunim Katan, and we have a Yelad Zekunim, you know, a child of your father's old age who's small. Okay, whether that's factually true is interesting. V'ach of Mace, his brother died. First time they ever said out loud that Yosef died. V'yivaser hu levado li'imo v'aviv ahivo. So we let you know that this son is not just any son. He's the youngest son from the mother that he loved, that our father loves. And if you look, the Bechor Shor says in source number 10, why is he telling this? V'ein lo timura. You can't replace Binyamin for our father. V'od ki aviv ahevo. Our father loves him. V'lo samta libcha alzos. And you didn't care. We told you that this was our father's last son from the wife that he loves. And you can't do that to him. You can't make us bring him down. But you didn't care. You asked us to bring him down anyway. And the Bechor Shor just keeps tracking this whole story and how every single time it's, Yosef, where's your mercy? And it's a subtle rebuke. So if we look at source number 11, so it's Pasuk Chaf Aleph, so we go back to page number 1. Pasuk Chaf Aleph, what happens after that? Vatomer el avadecha, horidui elai, vasima ini alav. Bring him down anyway, and I want to place my eyes on him. So if you look, in source number 11, the Bechor Shor says, "V'chilachinu ha'isasarech." Do you need our brother? Lama sha'alta lahavio. Why are you asking us to bring him down? V'heichan hi simanas ha'ayin elach shalcha. You said you wanted to look at him. Afilu ganav lacha hayilavor al pishol. Even if he committed a robbery, you should have overgone it. Va'ata rotel avkiyo elacha ulishtabibo hazech asdech shamarta asima ini alav sha'ata ba alav ba'alila. It's clear as day. Why are you asking Binyamin to be brought down? Why do you want Binyamin? There's a pretext going on here. It's clear that Yosef has an agenda. And don't think we're oblivious. We know. We know that you have an agenda. We know that you have something else going on. So then we told, in Pasuk Chav Gimel, Chavez, we told you he can't leave his father. If he leaves his father, one of them is going to die. Far shall argue which one. But the Bechor Shor notes in source number 12, in the bold, you didn't care. You still made us bring him down anyway. If you look at the next bold, you want to hold him now and keep him there. You caused all this. There's something going on here. We have no idea what. You really, really, really want Binyamin. But we have no idea why. But all of this for the Bechor Shor is saying, "What you have some weird agenda going on. We're totally not aware of why, but we know that you're behind this. So do the right thing. Because I am rebuking you, but I'm rebuking you subtly. I'm telling the story subtly to give over the message that you have a pretext going on. You have an agenda, but we're aware of what's going on." So if you look at finally the last comment of Yehuda, defining for Yehuda's speech for the Bechor Shor in source number 13. So why am I the person who's speaking to you? So the Bechor Shor explains in source number 13, Ki avdecha arav azanar im tomer. I'm the fourth son. Why am I the one who's speaking? I made the promise to my father. Okay, maybe you have a pretext, you want a good servant. I'll take his place. This is a fascinating line. Because everyone thinks that, wow, this is such a sacrifice of Yehuda. And it is a sacrifice. But Yehuda is saying that if you keep Binyamin, I'm not going home. I can't go home. Ki eich erad b'rav v'gomer. How could I see my father's pain? Like, how could I go home? If I don't come home with Binyamin, I know what Binyamin means to Yaakov. So I can't go home. Umotav ashar ani levadi V'hu yal v'lo sheyisharhu. I'd rather stay by myself in Mitzrayim and him go home, and not that he remain. V'ani sarech levorach b'makum she'in makirin. And if you would keep him, I wouldn't stay in Mitzrayim, but I wouldn't go home to Eretz Canaan either. I would have to go to a place that no one knows who I am, because I would not be able to see my father's pain. And that is Yehuda's speech. Basically, for the Bechor Shor, to sum up, again, try to add nuance based on the Pesukim, because he really does carry it through the whole way, is that the Bechor Shor assumes that Yehuda is rebuking Yosef for realizing, I know what you did, you brought about all this, I have no idea what your motives are, but I know you're behind this, but I can't say it explicitly, because I'm scared of you. You're a king. You're a melech. You're like Paro. I can't take you down, but we know what's going on, and do the right thing. He's not asking for mercy. He's not threatening to kill him. He's being pointed, not direct, but I'm going to respond. I'm not going to let you get away with this. I'm not going to let you get away with this, but I also respect your position. That is what the Bechor says. So I just want to take a step back for a second. And what does that tell us about Yehuda's character? Yehuda is someone, and this is a very, very important skill for life, who's able to make difficult points, but in an extremely respectful manner. You know, sometimes it's not hard to, some people have a very tendency to not say anything. They're just a total shmata, and they'll get rolled over. And some people, you know, are the people who complain about everything. And it's like, but they're not respectful, they have no kavod for anyone. And Yehuda is threading that needle down the middle. I know who you are, and I respect that. But you are not getting away with this. I need to say this point. This is a point that needs to be said. And that's really an amazing sign for a leader, right? You think about a leader, a king, to be able to say something to anyone and knowing who they are and knowing the different people and their status. That's extremely something which is it was just extremely important. And Yehuda is also not someone who's just going to get rolled over if they're being mistreated. He's not going to be trampled on. He's not going to be taken advantage of. But he also, even though this is veiled, it still takes a lot of courage and strength. You don't get the image of Yehuda's being a warrior and a general the same way, but Yehuda is someone who's willing to put himself on the line. He knows that he might get punished and there might be consequences from this speech. But nonetheless, he's willing to put himself on the line and stand up for his brother. And finally, which it won't be as pronounced as in the approach of the Ramban, but according to Yehuda, according to the Bechor Shor, Yehuda has empathy for his father. If Yosef keeps Binyamin in Mitzrayim, Yehuda's not going home. I've been through that already. I can't go through that again. I understand what's at stake for my father. I understand how much pain it's going to cause him, and I can't do it. So just better to take me. Just take me. And that is Yehuda's speech. Very impactful, very passionate, you know, being able to thread that needle of having respect, but also being able to criticize Yosef. And we really see that Yehuda has grown from Mechiras Yosef. Yehuda has been able to someone who sees his father's pains and understands the ramifications of his actions. Now I want to shift the focus for the Bechor Shor for a second, a wild, wild Bechor Shor. And why does Yosef reveal himself? So we have to understand something which the Mefarshim grapple with, which we noted that Rashi doesn't really address. But a separate topic in its own right, and I was going back and forth last night as to whether to include this section or not, but I think that you can't tell the story of what's happening here with of Yosef's revelation if you don't understand the motivation behind Yosef's actions. Yosef was sold 22 years ago. Yosef does not reach out to his father. The Ramban points out, after he moves to Eretz Yisrael, the Ramban added certain things into his commentary that weren't the original edition, because he saw certain things in Eretz Yisrael, he changed his mind about things, and one of the things he adds is the Ramban here, which we're going to see in a couple minutes, that Mitzrayim is a six-day walk from Eretz Yisrael. Yosef, over 22 years, couldn't send a message to Yaakov that he was still alive. Why on earth did Yosef never send a message? He never reached out to his father. Okay, he was a slave, he couldn't do it. You're the viceroy of Egypt for 9 years, and you don't reach out to your father? So, and also, Yosef accuses his brothers of spies, puts money in their sacks, makes them schlep down Binyamin, knowing how difficult that is going to be for Yaakov. And then what does he do? He falsely accuses Binyamin. Sorry, after already locking up Shimon and the brothers for a bunch of days, falsely accuses Binyamin, makes them stay, and threatens them that he's going to keep Binyamin as a slave. Anyone else find that perplexing? Why on earth is Yosef doing all of that? So not only does not reach out, but I'm going to make your lives miserable. Fascinating question. So Rashi doesn't address that, but the Bechor Shor and the Ramban do. So I think to understand fully Yosef's side of why he reveals himself, we have to understand why Yosef hasn't revealed himself yet. So let's look back to the Bechor Shor. So the Bechor Shor, we're now going to page number 4, source number 14. Perek Lamed Zayin, Pasuk Chavav. Notice, not in our Parsha, but we're going back to all the way to Mechiras Yosef. And it's wild, but fascinating. V'nirim hadvarim, kishemachruhu, when the brothers sold Yosef, hishbi'uhu shelo yavo old el beis aviv. They made him take a shvua that he will never return home. Anyone who ever seen The Lion King, you know, Scar turning to Simba, you know, run away and never come back, right? That's what you have to do. Never come back. V'lo yigala atzma la'aviv, and he won't reveal himself to his brothers, to his father. V'lo yodia la'aviv shehuchai, he can't send a message. V'shuhum nimkar. Basically, they made him take a shvua. You cannot tell father whatever happened. You're not allowed to. V'lo yomer l'sham shehum ibnei Yaakov, you can't tell anyone there that you're a child of Yaakov. B'shum simen v'lo b'shum raya, you can't hint it, you can't tell him. V'chein asa. And that is what Yosef did. Shemutav hayalolasos came. Veloshi yamas biyadam. They gave him a choice, right? We will kill you on the spot, or we will sell you as a slave. But if we sell you as a slave, you have to promise to us. No one can know. You are not allowed to utter it out loud to any other person. You cannot write it in the sand, send a message, nothing. It is our secret between you and us. Otherwise, you're a dead man. And Yosef, wanting to live, says, sure. That is what I will do. So why does he not reach out to his father? Bechor Shor continues, because he's not allowed to. He took a shua. He took a shua that I will never reveal myself to my father or anyone else. We will not speak of it outside of us. That is Yosef's promise to them.
So it's under duress. He didn't have to.
So you have a whole question, halakha question, which could be it's a topic in its own right for this approach. But again, I'm more trying to do this as like a subpart of our bigger topic of Yehuda's speech and Yosef's revelation. Definitely the question you want to wonder is, a shua under duress, does that count as a shua? Does Yosef halachically have to keep the shua? But I want to know that even if he doesn't halachically have to keep the shua, he's still a man of his word. And he might not have to, but he made a promise. And Yosef decides, I'm going to keep that promise. Okay, so that's Bechor Shor number one. Bechor Shor number two. Now we get back to when Yosef first encounters his brothers in Egypt. Vayis naker aleim. He treats them as strangers. Chishev. Yosef thought. Source number 15, page number 4. Imagal lahem atzmi miyad. If I reveal myself to them right away, you know, they came to buy food, I'm going to tell them who I am. Mibnei shehein bushim al shemachru acheim v'tziaru avihem. They're embarrassed that they sold their brother and that they pained their father. Yomru li stoke. They're going to tell me, be quiet. Ata mushba va'omei chelo tegal osanu. We had a deal. You promised to us that you will never reveal. So what are you trying to do right now? Okay, even if we recognize you, you told us you're Yosef. But guess what? We're embarrassed. We sold our brother. We pained our father for a long time. You can't tell anyone. So even if Yosef saw his brothers buying food. And he's like, guys, it's me. But he was afraid. What are they going to do? Turn around and say, see you later. We're going home. Can't tell anyone. Remember, our promise. So what does he do? He has to get over that plan. And he has to come up with a plan. V'amar lahem kashos, umuraglam atem. You're spies. And he has to put them on this wild goose chase to basically make them break, let him out of the deal. V'dochkam ad shehiviu binyamin. He forces their hand until they have to bring Binyamin. V'notzen hagaviyah b'amtachto. He puts the goblet in Binyamin's bag. V'amar la'akvo le'eved. And he says, you're going to have to stay as my servant, Binyamin, because of what you did. U'kishara osam dechukim. When they were so, their arms were so twisted that Binyamin's going to have to say, and what does that mean for Abba? She'yurayim lachati la'aviyem. You know, they're afraid to sin to their father again. Gila atzmo. That is when he reveals himself. He oz yadosh al karchem yiglu gamhem shalok yaakib binyamin. Because now, Yosef has put himself in the upper hand. He has the blackjack, right? He has the winning hand. Why? Because he has all the leverage in the world. He has Binyamin. So he knows that they can't leave Mitzrayim without Binyamin. So once now he has pretext for Binyamin having to stay there. So he's in the driver's seat. He could say, you got to let me be able to talk to Abba. We have to be able to overcome this. So Yosef goes through all this and puts the brothers through all that to be able to overcome the shua and be able to. Yosef has one thing he wants. I want my dad. I want to come home. I want to be a part of the family again. But he doesn't know that the brothers feel the same way. He doesn't know if they've journeyed over these 20-something years to be able to get to that same place. So he has to put them in a position that he knows for sure. I got one shot at this. He knows for sure that they're going to have to allow me to tell Abba what has gone down. Or that I'm here and that I'm still alive, even if they don't. He doesn't know about the Mechira. And then the Bechor Shor explains our Pasuk. Back after Yehuda's speech, Perek Memhei, Pasuk Aleph, source number 16, page number 4. V'lo yachol Yosef lehisapek. Yosef was not able to hold back. Me livkos umilisgalos lahem atmo. From crying and revealing himself. Why? Ki lo matzam ana vehikar divrei emes, ki mitzar aviv yoser midai. That he realized that Yehuda was telling the truth. How he wanted to get back to Abba, but what at what cost? At what cost? He had to put his father through so much to be able to twist the brother's arm enough to lift the shua. And he realized Yehuda was right. Yehuda was right. He had pained his father. He had put him through this. Yehuda's veiled rebuke totally resonated with Yosef, but he felt he had no choice. But now it is time. I've reached the point. I've put my father through enough. I put my brothers through enough. They are now ready to lift the shua. So what does he do? V'tziva lehem lehotzi kol ishmaalav. And finally, why does he kick everyone out of the room when he reveals himself? Not because of embarrassment. V'od mipnei shvuaso. Because of his shvua. Shenishba shelo yigalo l'shem adam mechiraso. That he will not reveal his sale to anyone. So he had to kick the Egyptians out of the room because he wasn't able to tell. So if you just take a step back for a second, the Bechor is basically saying, short is saying, why did Yosef go through this whole goose chase to twist his brother's arm, to be able to lift the shvua that he took to be able to stay alive? And that's why Yosef finally reveals himself after Yehuda's speech, because it was time. It was time, and they were ready to lift the shvua, and he was able to reveal himself. What does this tell us about Yosef? What does this whole story for the Bechor Sharer tell us about Yosef? Number one, as we pointed out before, Yosef keeps his word. 22 years. And we know he had one thing in mind. I want to get my dad back. I want to see dad. I want to see Abba. I want to see Tati. But he keeps his word. Whether halachically he had to, whether he chose to keep his word, Yosef is someone who keeps his word. But just imagine the scene. You're 17 years old. Your brothers sell you out of the house. You don't think you're coming home, right? I'm not going back. I'm just being sold as a slave to Egypt. It's very easy to assume that Yosef gave up hope. And that Yosef assumed, I'm not going to have a relationship with anyone in my family. And from the second he sees the brothers, his whole purpose is, he sees Yosef someone with a plan. Yosef someone who's extremely clever and who just someone who wants to come home. Someone who wants to reunite with his family. And that really is what comes out from the Bechor Shor. So we've already seen two approaches, Rashi and the Bechor Shor. For Rashi, what is Yehuda's speech? Yehuda's speech is threatening Paro, threatening Yosef, threatening Mitzrayim. Why does Yosef reveal himself? Maybe because Mitzrayim is at stake. And for the Bechor Shor, Yehuda's speech is a veiled rebuke with respect. And Yosef is really, the whole story with Yosef is about being able to overcome the shua that he took to his brothers. But I want to end with one more approach, which is the approach of the Rambam. What was the goal of Yehuda's speech? The Ramban is very, very clear and articulate. Yehuda's speech is begging for mercy. I am begging. Take pity on Yaakov and Binyamin. As Nechama Leibowitz points out, the word father is used 14 times in this speech. 14 times. It's a lot of times for the word father to be used. And family and the role of family is clearly front and center for the Ramban. So we're going to start with the Ramban, and then we're going again in our same order, Yehuda versus Yosef. So what is going on for the Ramban? So if you look back again at page number one, first Pasuk Yud Ches, strange word that the Ramban picks up on. Vayigashi love Yehuda, vayomer bi'adoni, yidaber na avdecha davar ba'azne adoni. I want to say something. A davar is in singular. And if we note it, it's the longest speech in all of Sefer Bereishis. I'm back in source number one, page one. Pasuk Yud Ches. So Yehuda uses the word, I want to say a davar ba'aznei Adoni. I want to say one thing. You know, it's a lot. It's like the Magid Shir who gets up there. I mean, yeah, I just want to have one more point to add, and like 20 minutes later, you know, you're still sitting there. But it's a longer speech, but he says davar. So the Ramban picks up on that question. And the Ramban says, and now we're back to page number 4, source number 17. The Ramban says, Tam yidaber na avdecha davar. Lemar ki dvarim mu'atim yidaber. He's not going to say much. lo yu alav l'torach. It shouldn't be such a burden. V'hanachon be'enai. Ki davar, what is the davar, the one thing that he's asking? Hu hatmura. Asher yichal apanav l'hachlef binyamin achid bo. Because in essentially Yehuda's asking for one thing. Switch me for Binyamin. Change us. We want to do an exchange. This is what is Yehuda asking for? An exchange. Ki lo yivakish b'menu davar acher. If you look in the psukim, you look through all the psukim, you can look at all the psukim I gave you the whole speech. He doesn't ask for anything else. The only request that Yehuda has is switch me for Binyamin. Vishar dvarav pius ubakasha lazeh. They're all about appeasements and requests and putting the icing on the cake and the cherry on top, but just trade me for Binyamin. And we're going to see from the Ramban, he understands all the psukim that we saw and takes everything in that manner. If he's just asking for a request, why would Yosef get upset at him? So the Ramban says in Surah number 18, Yomer al yichar abcha bi, don't get upset, al dvarai lefanecha, don't get upset at me for speaking in front of you. Because, it takes a lot of you to speak in front of a king, even if you're just asking for something, and I'm going to go on for 17 psukim. So I'm only asking for one thing, but don't get upset. It's not because I'm speaking harshly. It's not because I'm threatening you. It's because I'm speaking to you. And anytime you speak to a king, you have to, don't get upset at me for going too long. You have to appreciate the king's time and realize who you're talking to. And similarly, in source number 19, what's ki chamocha ke paro? You're like paro. Uvigmora gado ani medaber lefanecha. Ki ilo ani medaber lefne paro. I'm taking you seriously. I'm speaking to you like I would speak to the king of Egypt. You are a king. I value your time. Don't get upset at me, but I just have one request. Trade me for my brother. And the Ramban is much more explicit about this. The main Ramban about Yehudas is in source number 20, page, at the bottom of page number 4. Adoni sha'al zavadav. Lo yadati tam la'richos divri Yehudi b'sipur mashahaya kvar b'nim. I have no idea why on earth Yehuda is going on for so long, and he's not adding anything really new. Yosef knew all the story. Yosef was there. So why is Yehuda just recounting information? It's like the person who gets up at every family simcha and starts sharing the family history, a bunch of times. And that's beautiful. You should know where you're coming from. And it's very important to do so. But is this the time right now? Like in the middle of the middle of this chaos, everyone's scrambling. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? And like, let me give you a history lesson. This is what happened between us. Like, why is he doing that? So the Ramban says, Vasher yirali al derech hapsha. They're just supplications to, he's trying to repeat the story to awaken Yosef's mercy. Yehuda assumed that Yosef was a God-fearing person and he was going to do the right thing. If he would frame things in the right way, he would be able to appeal to Yosef for mercy. He'd be able to say, come on, you're a God-fearing man. You told us you're a God-fearing man. You acted with us as a God-fearing man before. Show me some kindness and have some compassion on this old man and his son, who already lost their brother and their son. If we go to the next page, page number 5, continuing the Ramban, he tells the whole story again and how it was so hard. You asked us about our family, so we had to tell you that we had a brother. We didn't agree right away to bring him down. We said he can't leave his father. What we were going to do, we're starving, hungry. We had to bring him down anyway. Because you said, you don't see me again without Binyamin. We all had, our father didn't acquiesce to us and listen to us until we had no food. We needed to eat. It wasn't a ringing, do whatever you want, bring him. Yaakov had to admit with fear and worry. And now that he sees that the Binyamin's not there, he's going to die a sad and painful death. So now see my supplication, have mercy on us and on our father, our elder father. V'kach osi tachas anar le'evet olam ki tov ani mimenu. Take him instead of me. U'lecha tiyat tzedaka. And that is the right thing to do. V'zeh tam kol parsha. And for the Ramban, the whole story is, come on, please. If you notice, the different artists, paint Yehuda in different ways. So if you look at the cover, you really see Yehuda like bent over in front of Yosef. It's like you see like him request on one knee, like, please. And it's not, you know, it doesn't look like he's threatening Yosef with his sword with his hand on his hip. It really looks like he's, you know, speaking in front of a king and asking for a request of what he needs. And that is the approach the Ramban says. And the Ramban continues. If you look at source number 21, page number 5, Yehuda leaves out some crucial details in the story. V'lo hisker ma'aser Shimon v'alilos m'ragel matem. He never mentions that Yosef imprisoned Shimon and also that he accused them of being spies. And if he was giving them a rebuke and the pretext that the Bechor Shor said, so why on earth is he not saying very important details of the story? Why did you imprison our brother? Why did you call us spies for no reason? Rather, derech mutar imas malchus. Because if you're requesting something and you're trying to have respect and make one approach to the king, you're not trying to throw, you know, do this, well, you did this wrong and you did this wrong. That would go be counterproductive to what he wants to do. But, okay, and then the next Ramban in source number 22 basically just tells us that why is Yehuda the one who's doing this? It's because he's the Arev, and therefore he's the one who's making this request. But the most important thing is, what is Yehuda's request? He's just asking for mercy. Just trade me for Binyamin. If you look at source number 23, it very much highlights to us Yehuda's character. Vayomer ki ich elavi. End of his speech. Leodio ki yivchar lios eved olam. Yehuda would rather be a servant forever. Me aloso el aviv bilti hanar. Then going back to his father without his son. So lo yuchal leros barasso. He can't see Yaakov. What's going to happen if he comes home without Binyamin? Ki yivka tamid v'yisonein alav kol hayom. He's going to be crying constantly and lamenting over him every single day. You know, rewind, put in a VCR for a second, rewind back to Mechiras Yosef. Imagine you're Yehuda. You convince all your brothers to sell Yosef. And, you know, okay, ach tarof taraf, Yaakov was obviously not so happy. He'll move on. We did what we thought was right. You know, we're not getting into that for right now. But day one comes, he's crying, can't get over it. Okay, give it a few months, 22 years. 22 years. And Yehuda still sees his father cry every single day. He wakes up, he's crying. He can't stop talking about Yosef. And he sees it. And he feels his father's pain. And he finally gets it. He gets it. He understands what he put his father through. And how on earth could I do that to him again? I'd rather stay a slave in the corrupt Egypt for this person who maybe did all these things wrong, who knows. But I can't see my father like that. He feels his father's pain. So what does, for the Ramban, what is the message for Yehuda's character? Number one, he took his responsibility very seriously. I am an Arev. When a leader says he's going to do something, I make a commitment. I'm going to follow through. I'm going to be an Arev. I'm going to take my Arva seriously. I'm going to be the one to speak up. Number two, he understood his father's pain. And the most important thing, according to this approach for the Ramban, Yehudi really wants to prevent, what is Yehuda's goal? He wants to not pain his father. And he's really come full circle from the Yehuda who sold Yosef through the whole process of Tamar. Might be involved in that part of his tshuva process. But Yehuda's done tshuva. He's not going to make the same mistake again. He's going to say, put everything on the line. I have one request. Take me instead. Take me instead of Binyamin. But now I want to just focus on, in the last couple of minutes that we have, and why on earth did Yosef reveal himself now? What is it about what Yehuda said? So for the Ramban, the same way we did for the Bechor Shor, why on earth did Yosef not reveal himself until this point? So the Ramban has a famous shita that what happened was Yosef saw that his brothers had come and bowed in front of him when they came. But what happened? There was someone missing. There was Binyamin was missing. So, what was the first dream? The first dream that Yosef had was that all his brothers were going to bow down to him, including Binyamin. So Yosef had to orchestrate everything to ensure that Binyamin was going to be there also. So why is he doing all, maybe the money in the sacks is different, but everything he put them through in the beginning was to bring Binyamin down. But guess what? Binyamin came down. Binyamin bows down with the rest of the brothers. Dream one, accomplished. So now we still have dream two. So we have to figure out what that's going to be. But let's pause for 1 second. So he had to bring every single person down. But Yosef, the Ramban tells us in source number 24, I'll say it outside, that Yosef was confident that he gets a message across to his father that I'm alive, I'm in Mitzrayim, come down.
He knows that Yaakov's going to come through. He knows Yaakov will be there in 3 seconds. He knows that he's going to come, he'll bow down, fulfill the dreams. That's not what he's worried about. He's worried about his brothers coming down and bowing to them with Binyamin. So he brings everything until Binyamin's goblet is about for that purpose. But then, what's the deal with Binyamin's goblet? Why does he put his goblet in Binyamin's bag? So if you look at the Ramban, source number 24, page number 5, in the third paragraph, by the bold.
He wasn't trying to just, you know, you did bad to me, I'm going to do bad to you and pain them.
Maybe there's hatred between the brothers and Binyamin. Maybe they're jealous of him. Maybe our father loves Binyamin the same way now that I'm gone, and they're jealous of him just like they were jealous of me.
Maybe
Binyamin was able to intuit and figure out, there were clues around, that the brothers were the ones responsible for killing my older brother, and that caused strife. But either way, Yosef was worried that Binyamin was hated by his brothers. So what's he going to do? So it's very nice he got the first dream to happen, and he could, on his way to getting the second dream to happen, because Yaakov was going to come down. But if I reveal myself right now, maybe there's hatred between him and Binyamin. On the way home, when they're going to get their father, what's going to happen? They're going to kill Binyamin. So, Valkein lo ratza sheyelech iman Binyamin. He didn't want Binyamin to go with them. Ulai yeshalchu bo yadam adbadku osam ba'avaso. So, maybe they're going to send their hands against him and hurt him and kill him until he ensured that they really love him. So, why did he do this whole thing with the goblet and put Yehuda in this whole position? Was to show me you love Binyamin. Because I am not sending my brother home unless I know, I'm confident that you are going to take care of him and you're not going to make the same mistake. So Yosef was testing them. Yosef was testing them, but we're going to get pointed out in a second what the point of the test was. But Yosef was testing them. So why does Yosef reveal himself now? Right? Yehuda gives this whole speech and we saw that Yosef chooses to reveal himself. Lo yachol Yosef lehisapek. So on page number 6, I want to quote you the two approaches of the Ramban and the Radak. I know we're focusing on the approach of the Ramban. I like the Radak's answer better for the Ramban than the Ramban's answer, but I think both are very powerful and help us with both Yehuda's character and Yosef's character. So according to the Ramban, if you look at what does it mean that Yosef was not able to hold back lechol hanitzav imalav, v'hanachum be'enai. Second paragraph, page 6, source 25. Shayu shami beis paro, mina mitzrim anashim rabim. So there were lots of people there who were at Yehuda's speech. Yachlu panav limchol Binyamin. And they turn to Yosef and say, you have to let Binyamin go. Ki nichmu rachmeim al tachne Yehuda. They were so moved by Yehuda's speech. The brother, the son, the father, and the son who passed away. And you're going to take this kid away from their father? So they turn to Yosef and say, let him go, let him go. And Yosef has been having this inner strength to try and hold out. But he can't do it. He just can't. He can't. He has to reveal himself. Because everyone's so moved by Yehuda's speech. And if you look at the Radak, very similar, but a little different, source number 26. Kevon shehisker kama pamim raz aviv shim se'imse anu nichmu rachma v'alav. He mentioned how his father had been pained, so his mercy was awakened. V'lo yachol lachzik asmo lifkos. He broke down. Yosef didn't necessarily plan on revealing himself there, but he had no choice because he couldn't control himself after how much he had hurt his father. And from both the Ramban and for the Radak, for the Yehuda's speech worked. Yehuda gave this impassioned speech. Have mercy. And the rest is addressing. It's all about, switch me for Binyamin, have mercy. And for the Ramban, that influenced everyone in the room, all the mitzvim there, they don't even know Yaakov. And they're so, you know, so taken with Yehuda's speech. And for the Radak, it moves Yosef that I have to reveal him. So what does that tell us about Yosef, and what does that tell us about Yehuda? And with this, I want to close. So for the Ramban, as we've noted before, Yehuda has come full circle. Yehuda's done tshuva. I'm not going to make that same mistake again. You know, I'm not going to make that same mistake. And for Yosef, Yosef is someone who's patient and wise. You know, I'm going to make my dreams happen. I'm a dreamer. I'm going to make my dreams happen. I'm going to make a plan to make them happen. I'm going to get Binyamin down here. And, you know, some people are critical of Yosef. Who is Yosef to test someone? You know, it's like the Shana Bet kid. Like, let me give the Shana Aleph kid a test to see if he's so from. Like, who are you? Why would you do that? It's not your place. Why is Yosef testing his brothers? But for the Ramban, I think it works very nicely that he wasn't just caring about himself and to see whether his brothers did tshuva towards him, but it was for Binyamin's safety. It was for Binyamin's safety. Are they going to learn? Did they learn their lesson? Because otherwise, I have to take care of my brother. I have to make sure that he survives. I'm not your life coach. I'm not telling you what to do. But this is all about Binyamin safely. And finally, what about for Yehuda? Besides for his tshuva process, etc., Yehuda is a man of words. Yehuda is an impassioned, you know, passionate, dynamic speaker, someone who is able to turn the whole Mitzrayim's room and say, have mercy on this kid who stole the goblet from the viceroy. That's crazy. He should be hung. He should be killed. No. Let him go. And I think that this story is a great, important story that's often sometimes overlooked. And everyone focuses right after Yosef is revealed or the earlier development of Yehuda. But this story hopefully was able to serve as a crucial window into both who Yehuda was as a person and who Yosef was. Have a great Shabbos.